actually requested additional time and for this item to come back. There was a question regarding when making corrections retroactively, is there some time bar in terms of stopping at some point, only going back 3 years or 5 years and not to the time when the retirement calculation was made and the payment was made. We asked our trusted independent fiduciary counsel to look into that issue. You do have a confidential memorandum from Harvey about this, and at this point I will turn it over to Harvey to summarize that memo.
I think the best summary I can give you that I'd be comfortable giving in public is a statement that out of the very recent City of Oakland case, that where the Court of Appeals, the same Court of Appeals that hears cases from Cicera, Costa County, specifically stated, we believe the board has discretion to decide whether, how, and to what extent overpayments made to retirees should be repayable. Okay. So, as I've explained further, and I think on other occasions as well, there's no legal limitation to the look back time to make adjustments. You know from other material that the IRS expects the board to make reasonable efforts to make corrections and pay the correct benefits. But the law does give this board substantial discretion, however, in deciding how far back to go and how to structure repayments of overpaid amounts. So that's on the overpayment. In my experience with other systems, I'm trying to think if we've done this here. I can't remember. We've had some big adjustments in some of the other 37 Act systems over time. Each situation has been different, and in most instances, however, the boards have limited their look back and their adjustment of recapturing overpaid benefits to a period, frequently 3 years, but there's nothing that requires that. You have to look at each situation, you have to see what you have records for. Just want to consider the circumstances each time, but my point to you is there's no limitation on your discretion in terms of going back as far as you believe necessary to make the effort to return to the system money that was improperly paid out.
Once we do it, do we have to remain consistent? If we go back 5 years on one, do we can only go 5 years on everything else after that? Or
not necessarily. Somebody who falls on the wrong side of that will say, well, you did it this way in one circumstance and in another, but it's really, you know, you're going to make a judgment call based upon all the circumstances in each instance, what sounds appropriate to you. A lot of times it's also going to depend on whose fault it was. Was it a system error, a calculation error? Was it misleading information? Was it erroneous information from the employer? All that will weigh into the balance, I think.
Carrie?
Harvey, my question is this. I actually have two. Comment. Do we have to put a time frame in there? Because, as you know, our next item deals with a situation that goes back to 2001. And going to Gabe's concern, can't we just have a policy that, as errors are brought to our attention, in order to avoid the situation, do we have to be explicit on a time frame? Because our next situation, literally, this goes back to 2001, and if we had a 5 year give or take, that would be outside of that. So
no, we don't have to have an explicit
great
policy time period.
Great.
We can look at each situation.
These two. My comment would be that I want it open ended, or any time an error is discovered, it is appropriate for this board to review that for any possible action.
And to add on, I think we just have to explain why we went X amount of years on one and Y on another, as long as we have a good logical reason for it, I think it's fine.
Well, I'm sorry, sir?
In other words, we may go back on one case, say we go 5, and the other one go back 7, as long as we can explain that it's not like a bias.
Right, and then you wouldn't have it in the policy what the time frame was, because I have a lot of questions on our next item. Well, not a lot, basically one.
Karen?
If I may address that, the policies as written in the agenda packet are open-ended. They
Great.
Do not have a limitation period in them.
Then I would move the item.
I'll second. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Item 9. Consider and take possible action to recover erroneous spousal continuance payments to an ineligible spouse.
Okay, well, this one is a very unusual situation. So, just recap what the unmodified allowance is. The basic unmodified automatic retirement allowance that you get when you retire contains a provision that when you die, a 60% continuance continues to your spouse. And under the original law, that you must have been married to that spouse for 1 year prior to retirement. Now there's an enhanced provision where if you weren't married prior to retirement, but you were married 2 years prior to death, and the spouse is under 55 at the time the retiree dies, then you could also be eligible for the 60% continuance.
Not under, you just said under 55, 55 or older.
Correct.
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
Not under. That's our problem.
Yes. Wouldn't be here if that was, okay, so we'd have a lot more errors if that were the rule. So and that rule was new to CSERA in 2000. So in 2001, a retiree passed away. We were notified, and it was determined at the time that the surviving spouse was eligible under the new rule. They were married 2 years prior to death, but even though they did provide us with everything we asked for and the birth certificate of the survivor, they were not 55, although we did pay them anyway. So we've been paying them since 2001, survivor's allowance that they're not entitled to.
So, Mr. Chair, that's my question. So you did ask for a birth certificate or some legal verification of the age of the spouse. So that is our common practice. They have to prove their age.
Yes.
So how did this come to our attention that this person, in fact, was not 55? I'm glad it did, but what happened in the intervening years that we found out that they're not 55?
It came up during a review by accident. Let's say. We discovered it, we were reviewing this particular benefit, and we said, why is this person eligible?
Yeah, what made you think that they weren't 55 when we thought they were?
We know what age they are.
No, you're missing my question.
Yeah, how did it come about?
In October or October.
Somehow you got a birth certificate when this person, the retiree died, saying the wife was 55.
Yes.
In the intervening time, something has happened that made you question that they were 55 at that time. So I'm asking what that was.
You're asking about the discovery of the error.
How did it come up?
How did you discover the error? Was there an internal audit or something like that that was being done?
Did we get an inquiry from Social Security? Did this person since die?
We were reviewing cases for another issue when the spouse was, or but the beneficiary was much younger than the retiree for something totally different.
Okay, another case.
And we looked at it and we said, well, wait a second. This person was not even eligible. We weren't looking for this.
I understand that, but somehow she said she was 55, and now you've determined
she's not. No. She never said she was 55. No.
You told me she gave you a birth certificate.
She did give us a birth certificate, and it
Accurate.
Said she was 51. Okay, so okay, so
that's,
here's
okay. That's
okay, so
where we're.
Okay, so let me back up. So it appears at the time the retiree died, the payroll clerk, the retiree counselor, did not check the age at that time.
Okay,
that's it.
They checked that they were married 2 years prior to death, and made no comment as to age.
Okay, so have we rectified that? Do we now ask for some legal verification on the retiree, the surviving spouse, their age?
Hang on. My understanding is we actually did get it at that time. It was missed by the counselor.
No, I understand. Oh, okay.
It's part of the review process to actually check that.
Is it now?
Fact.
Is it now, Kurt?
Is it now? What are we doing so this never happens again?
We are working to implement a better process.
Okay. What would to me it would be birth certificate. What
we
else?
We have the birth certificate. Somebody has to look at the birth certificate and calculate the age. And
how do you make someone do their job?
And they didn't know it right. I understand that, and I'm trying to be fair here. But in the, okay, are there other cases out there where they've not checked the birth certificate, even though we got it? How are we going to make sure that there are... Okay, there's two issues here. There was a staff person that didn't do their job, and you're implementing something to make sure that staff now always does something. But in the intervening time, are there other spouses out there who may fall into this category? Are we looking at that?
We are looking.
Okay, so there could be others coming forward.
Let me help you out with one thing. I know of a specific incident that happened about 2 years ago. There was a... sheriff that passed away, and his wife was under 55, and they came to me and said, this isn't fair, this isn't right, she should be entitled, and she wasn't. Since this incident, they have been more careful in calculating, because I know of one particular incident where a spouse, female spouse, was under the age of 55
and didn't get it. Can we require a document that is signed by a surviving spouse under penalty of perjury that I will, along with a birth certificate, that I am 55 and that it's on the checklist and the employee has to check it off before we process it?
Yes.
That seems pretty simple and straightforward to me.
I think this sounds like, it really goes to a internal procedural error within CICERA in the way things were done 13 years ago. And, I think things have changed since then, but I think maybe you're working on further refining this change. And my understanding was that I thought I heard something recently about implementing a management review and sign-off. So it's not just one person
Part of the problem is, first of all, we don't know if there was a management review or not. That's not even part of the process
documented
at that time. Right? There needs to be a more complete process with supervisory controls to make sure those processes are being followed.
Internal
control. I
can't
say today that
there are no
the process we have is perfect. We know that this mistake is not very likely to happen, but we're not exactly where we want to be.
Okay, and I guess my response to that is because of the outrageous sum and our ability to collect it back, that it doesn't seem like it should take a long time for our manager to implement this immediately. I don't get why I hear you saying we're implementing it. It should be implemented. And that would be...
It should be a priority.
There's no excuse for this. I appreciate that you found it. I don't think you were even here back when this happened. So we need to make sure that there is a process currently in place that this is done. It shouldn't take a review. It shouldn't take further discussion. I would think by simple fiat, you can implement this right now, because I am very concerned that we are going to be able to get this amount back.
I like the idea of a rep being required, that is, as a statement and, an affirmative representation of someone's age. I mean, it limits the...
Along with a birth
the potential
certificate.
For error. Right, along with the birth certificate, but it takes away the inadvertence or the got it wrong or was dyslexic on the day and didn't get the birth date right or
and
whatever.
And then a supervisor sign off on it or somebody... beforehand.
But if you have a representation warranty, I'm of X age and I'm entitled to X benefit, at least you've got that and that's in the mix, and you can cross check that against
go back against this woman for fraud. Yeah. She didn't do anything fraudulent.
No,
we screwed
that.
Up.
Right. And doing it the way you've suggested with an affidavit or a statement allows for
fraud.
A fault-based recovery action, whereas here you don't have that. So
go ahead.
Oh, and I can say that we have been working on improving internal controls. And Deborah, as you mentioned,
there had been some processes that weren't always subject to a supervisor or manager review, and that is getting built in for all of our processes.
Okay, and I love it, but you're saying built in. It's being built in. What can you assure me by the end of
today,
the business week, that this has been implemented? I don't think you need to wait for other things to happen to implement that.
I can assure you that by the end of this month, it will be implemented.
Okay. So what I would say is if it's implemented by the end of this month, that anybody that comes in with an application tomorrow, you need to personally review. You got 3 weeks here, folks, and so I'm sure nobody's coming in, but we have to assure the public that this is being addressed immediately.
And I can also tell you that as errors have been brought up, part of that discussion has been, okay, what can we do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
And I appreciate that. But I keep hearing it's all perspective.
Yeah.
And
but change
as soon as this was, as soon as this was discovered, that should have been implemented. It shouldn't need to be waiting till the end of this month.
When you change the process, though, you have to change people's jobs and how paper flows from one place
Deborah,
to the other.
No, Deborah, not in this situation.
Yeah,
you can issue a directive that says any retirement counselor needs to have a birth certificate and an affirmative action. That doesn't require our action. That is an executive decision, and I want it implemented. So now what are we going to do? We're giving you the motion is to authorize you to seek recovery. Can we hear some concepts of how that's going to go? What the process will be?
It's actually outlined in the policy that you just adopted. This is an overpayment of benefit. We would send a letter out to the
I read that, but
And ask for the amount to be paid. We will work with them on making arrangements for payments. And
does it include the ability to sue if they decide to not to do that?
Yes.
All right.
I did read the policy, but this was such an egregious amount. We were looking at over-under benefits.
The one question on the $285,000 total, that includes interest at the member crediting rate. Since this was an error on Cicera's part, that should probably be
3% rate,
or even
for the policy, yes.
Maybe, or even zero, and then going forward on how when they decide to pay it off, charge the 3% from today going forward. Or
if there was no act or knowledge on the part of the payee that they were indeed receiving a payment that they're not entitled to,
Right. Then
yes, it would be a 3% interest
rate. I'm sorry, if I could, did people sign, she provided a birth certificate. Did she have any knowledge of what the policy was, isn't it?
No, in fact, when we spoke to her, after we discovered the error, we spoke to her, she told, now, people that were here at the time aren't here, right?
But right.
She told us that when she reported the death, right, of her husband to us, and she was told she was eligible for survivor's benefits. She was very surprised, and she asked several questions.
That's helpful to know. Thank you.
She's not from this country. She doesn't understand how it works, but she was very surprised that she would be entitled to a benefit, being married to him, 7 years after he retired.
Harvey, do you want to?
With reference to the interest rate, the policy on the last page talks about if it's an error by the system, 3%, but the board in its discretion may select a different rate. I recommend that you leave the interest item open. There's going to be some communication here back and forth with this member over the repayment of that. And rather than lock us in specifically to a 3%, that may be something that is negotiable. I assume there'll be some conversation about time equals money, interest accrual, and perhaps staff can conduct those discussions and bring back something to ratify with the board, as opposed to an immediate default to the 3%.
Okay. Jerry?
It says recommendation on the bottom, authorize Cicera to seek recovery of overpayment and appropriate interest. Okay, that's what the recommendation is. I don't think we should. I don't think we have a right to. I think it was our mistake, and that from the point that we discover that mistake, then from then on out, we initiate whatever. If it's dropping, in this case, it would be not providing the retirement from the date that we discovered on out. I don't believe in clawing back 10 years on a person that's getting less than $1,000 a month over 10 years. I don't know how important this was to this person in terms of her lifestyle and what the impact is going to be. I don't even know if this person has resources to pay a minimum of $172,000. And if I remember correctly, there were a couple of administrators that were elected to office and over a course of many years received both their retirement plus their salary from the county. And when we discovered it, we stopped it from that point forward. We didn't claw back on those administrators to get that thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars back. This is unfair. It's unfair. We made the mistake. We should swallow it. So that's where I stand. I'm opposed to going after this person.
Rusty?
And Jerry, I understand your feelings there. My dilemma is, again, we have a tax status that exempts us from having to charge taxes on contributions, and not until pensions are paid out. I'm wondering again if this jeopardizes that tax status.
Wouldn't this be considered a gift of public funds if we did not pursue it?
That's another issue too. But I wanted to address earlier, Karen, your point too. The law was changed in 2000. The retiree passed away in 2001, which is when the error supposedly occurred. That's a short time when the law had changed. I'm not sure even then. But it was brought to staff's attention to know that they should have been asking for a birth certificate for 55. Maybe that's the reason why it's not on record. Nobody caught it. And I imagine the reason for the discovery today is because we now have a benefits compliance program. And we're going through our records and we're discovering a lot of stuff that should have been discovered earlier. Unfortunately, it wasn't. But so that's the reason why it's here today. And I would commend again staff for the great work they're doing. And I'm sure there's more to come. But I'd keep in mind again when the law was changed and when these errors were occurred or had occurred. Go easy on staff.
Well, the board took action in 2000.
But
not the law changed. The board took action in 2000. So again, a year went by.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying. But
and again, these policies, the two that we have before us today, they were before us before back in, when was it, October or prior? And we put them off till today. So I don't know if Gail could have done anything sooner than today when the policies were finally approved by us.
I disagree, but okay.
All right.
Jerry.
Yeah, I sympathize with what you're saying, Jerry, about fairness and unfairness, but I'm concerned that I do believe we have a legal obligation to go back and rectify the errors.
Well, did we have the same obligation with the administrators?
Let me finish.
No, because it wasn't illegal.
And if we,
it's because they're sound.
If we choose not to do that in this case, I think it actually falls into that category of abuse of discretion. To me, the discretion there is basically we're just saying, our fault, no foul. I'm not comfortable doing that.
Okay.
My sense, like Jerry's at the beginning, is that we need to follow our procedure. However, my guess is that the completely victimless or completely guiltless victim, if it's as being presented, I had no knowledge at all that this was something that she wasn't entitled to, and it was basically an unexpected gift, if you will. An expected set of payments, and she gratefully accepted it and spent it, in no way, shape, or form is likely to be able to come back with any kind of recovery. So we would have a debt outstanding, but no real or practical way of recovering it. I'm assuming that we have some ability to negotiate then an acceptable repayment, which may be very modest, to offset the obligation that legally we are required to proceed. I would ask also Harvey, the likelihood of going to court and pursuing this kind of a case before a jury seems to me to be slim and none in terms of being successful. And is this is it realistic from a point of view of pursuing something like this to actually, the question was asked, going to court, that we could do anything like that?
This is a closed session.
Is that closed session?
Yeah, speak directly into the microphone. And good luck to you.
Well, I think it's a fairly obvious observation.
I recognize the cowboy and his spiritual advisor, Slim and None.
That was good.
Okay, these are the things. This is why you guys get paid the big bucks, to exercise your collective judgment on this. You all know the costs and risks of litigation. You know you can weigh the fairness or unfairness of this. We have, there are two guiding lights here that you just have to weigh in your minds. One is your constitutional sworn obligation to the members and beneficiaries of the system to pay them their benefits. And the other is the obligation to the system to pay out only the correct level of benefits. That's why you're granted discretion, and that's really why I suggest that in this situation, you know, in the situation where we have a past overpayment to an existing member who's going to continue to get retirement benefits, we have the ability, if we can't get money paid back immediately, to offset against the monthly benefit check and to reduce the monthly benefit check till we get repaid. In this situation, we're turning off the benefit entirely. And so we don't have that. But at this stage, we don't know if the member, the beneficiary here, has sufficient assets from other sources to make us whole or to make us partially whole, or has future assets that could be tapped at the time of that person's demise. We often have to make claims against estates out of estate funds for claims that are unpaid. We have many situations where the retirement board is owed a substantial sum of money from an error like this, can't get it out of the monthly living revenue of the individual, but when that person passes away, we have a claim against the estate. And if there's real estate or whatever else in the estate, then there's a claim that can be satisfied at that point. The IRS and California law and any fiduciary trust law wants you to make an effort, a reasonable effort, to recover incorrectly paid sums. What's a reasonable effort under the circumstances is within your call. But again, I would suggest that you delegate this to staff to open the dialogue with the member and say, this is the claim that we have. You've been overpaid public money for 10, 12 years. It's inappropriate. We have to recover that. Let's talk. These things don't go to court. By the time you pay legal fees, it can be more than this. And so there's some reason you have to exercise here, some common sense, to say, okay, let's see if we can recover some, if not all. How can we go about doing that? Is there going to be interest? Is there not going to be interest? That's kind of what you have to make a decision on. You could make a decision, say, well, we'll go back 3 years, we'll go back 2 years worth, something meaningful, but we know we can't get it all. You could do that. I've seen that happen.
But that might
that's
be.
This is not. By the way, this is not a system-wide error.
No.
This is an individual one-off
right.
error.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I move that we accept staff's recommendation in order to pursue whatever remedies are available to us, including the sending of the letter. Because, as you say, we don't know what this individual's other assets are, and short of filing a lawsuit, that you would come back, staff would come back at that time to give us a status report. But I do want to, I think it's important to begin the process so that we can get our ducks lined up, such that if there are other assets, including estate assets at an appropriate time, we can make a claim for those. So I would move that we accept staff's recommendation.
So a couple questions, do it now or you want to wait?
Oh, is there a second?
I'll second the motion on the grounds that there's no harm in the ask.
Okay, and how much of a two things. How much of a precedent are we setting? If we do this for this one person, do we do this for everybody? Just not, you know, show bias. And second, would a person have an argument, I gave up a job, you know, that could have been making X amount of money because I knew I was having this in? That's the two things I want to know about.
Well, I think we have to take that on, I'm sorry, Harvey, but on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I'm asking that question. If we do this for this person, does somebody come in that's got, you know, millions of dollars in assets, has the same case, we say, well, this person, we don't feel so bad for, do we do something different? I'm asking that question.
Well, I would suggest that we shouldn't look at precedent. Member Tellis would urge that the board look at the precedent of how three administrators of the system were treated in the system, and others say, well, that's not precedential, we're not bound by that. It has the force of persuasion to it, but I wouldn't worry that, you know, if you make a decision in a unique circumstance that you have to follow that in every circumstance. So look at them on a unique basis. If it was a system error, you know, we had a system error in the Fresno system 10 years ago where everybody's final comp was, you know, that's broad different. Number of people, their final comp was miscalculated by the system. That was a full system error, and you wouldn't want to single out one person and do it one way for them and one way for somebody else. You'd want to apply it systemically.
Need a cigarette.
Here, this is a one-off staff error for an individual. I don't see it as precedential for anyone else.
The second part, has there been a case of somebody who said, look, I gave up a great job because I knew this money was coming in. So now I no longer have that job opportunity.
Yeah, that's referred to in the, you know, the law has to put a label on everything. So the label that's called is estoppel. Basically, I relied to my detriment. I whether it's a retiree or whatever, I took actions. I went out and bought a boat. I gave money to my kids for college, you know, in reliance on this. Now you can't pull the rug out from under me. The law about trying to apply estoppel to a public agency over public funds is not very encouraging to those who would make that argument. That's all I'd say publicly. But it is an argument, but it's not very successful.
Just one other question. We talked about the internal control and making sure it never happens again. My concern is this is now the second spousal error case we've seen in the last 6 months, or that we've located. And my question to staff is, should there be a project put on the future agenda for actually verifying all spousal payments currently in the system? I wouldn't go back to people who are gone, but maybe we should be looking at doing maybe a special project of auditing the integrity of our spousal payments.
That's something we could do.
I want to add something. I should have said something earlier, especially Aaron, you brought it up. We put controls in place last week for a second review on these immediately.
Thank
with
you.
Staff. And then because we have a checklist that we use that did not specifically ask for the age or the length of the marriage, we're revamping the checklist. But it hasn't been given to Kurt because we're running payroll and a few other things. So he hasn't seen that, but I'm working on staff with that already. So that has been put into place in the meantime until we have something. And if we happen to have the situation, they're making notes, written notes on the checklist. So it has not been ignored. It hasn't been finalized, but as far as I'm concerned, it's in place. So
wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That in the broader context, we're looking at disbursements in general as far as internal controls, and that those disbursements are being made in a compliant way under CERL and under tax code as well, and how those are being impacted and being responsible party and staff that does that work. So I'll be mapping out a number of internal controls, mapping out the actual process, identifying what control points are appearing, and here there may be lacking written supervisory controls.
Good. Okay, any more comment on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Wait. this is the motion to follow, to give Harvey the authority to go and talk and negotiate?
No, Karen.
Not me.
Karen.
Staff.
Karen?
No,
okay,
staff will be recovering.
Karen's.
This is the.
It's your motion?
The recommendation at the bottom of the page.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm opposed.
Okay. One opposition, any abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay.